After experiencing the transformative power of a regular meditation practice, it's natural to feel inspired to share this gift and guide others on their own journey of discovery through meditation. Join Buddhist teacher David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell, comedian and creator of the Netflix animated series The Midnight Gospel, for a free online event on Tuesday, May 7th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. They'll discuss the profound practices of mindfulness in Dharma Moon's renowned mindfulness meditation teacher training program. Get certified by Dharma Moon to teach meditation, lead group practice sessions, and work with individual students. Visit dharmamoon.com/beherenow for more info and to reserve your spot for the free online event with David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up now that spring is here, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. So what's the right amount of socializing for you? Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. It's a great way to build relationship skills, figure out your goals, and so much more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/BeHereNow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/BeHereNow.
So I have something on my website. I've got a banner on one of my pages that says magical thinking is highly strategic.
Wow. I think we found your zone here.
that's who I am. I mean, as a person, for sure.
Wow. Magical thinking is highly strategic. So you got to unpack that for everybody a little bit.
So for sure. I mean, I'm like, where do I start? There's so much to this topic.
Where do we start? We start where we are. And we're at the beginning of the Creativity, Spirituality, and Making a Buck podcast on the Be Here Now Network. This is episode number 22, Thinking Magically is Highly Strategic, with special guest Chris Ann Donnelly. In this episode, David is in conversation with Chris Ann, who embodies creativity, spirituality, and right livelihood in a myriad of ways. As you'll hear, she is a creator of tarot and oracle decks, a design and marketing strategist who helms her own company, Pixel Brand, and she also offers unique courses for creators that combine marketing, manifestation, and intuition. Chris Ann and David are meeting each other for the first time here, and you can hear them warming into the conversation. I strongly encourage you to stick with this one as it goes to some really compelling and surprising places, including archetypes, branding and magic, multiple timelines, and even Al Gore. Enjoy.
So, Chris Ann, welcome to the podcast. It's a pleasure and a delight to have you here.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. Same. I'm super excited to be here.
Yeah. So, we tend to move around a little bit in this podcast, but it looks like you're already moving around among the topics that we're sort of trying to integrate. So, in a nutshell, it's the idea of spiritual practice and however you define that, and then the creative expression, and then the business dimension or the prosperity aspect. How do they work together? So feel free to jump around through those topics. I'll tell you right away, there's a word in there that I wanted to ask you about. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
The word is muse.
Mm.
Are you in touch with the muse?
Yes. Oh my gosh. I mean, the muse is my, it's so funny because I have this, the Muse Tarot. And when I first did that independently before it was published through Hay House, it came with this sort of like the whole guidebook was poetry and everything was, it felt like it was, a very distinct type of creativity that was beyond myself, right? It was outside of myself. So that's what feels like the muse to me, where it's this kind of creative juice, this beautiful energy that it hits me like, it's almost like running into a wall and there's nothing that you can say yes or no in that moment. And if you say yes and you go, then it's just like, it's like the floodgates open and the ideas and the images and the words, they just, I can't even keep up. It's like my fingers are just.
So you said it. Now, some people, do you feel it's gender fluid, the muse?
I love that question. And I think I say it because I don't have this sense, like, it's funny because when I'll write about the muse, I may say she or her, because it's such a traditional way of looking at the muse, right? Mm-hmm. Or the muses. I say the muse and not the muses because I feel like it's one energy. And then that it energy for me, it's not like I get like different muses, a muse that brings me poetry and one that it just feels like one and the same. So I do refer to it as it because it's so also connected to, you know, my whole paradigm, the universe, the, you know, goddess, God, creation, creativity. I feel like it's sort of this spiraling. This is really hard for me to even explain because I'm trying to bring you into my brain here for a second, but I feel like it's this spiraling energy that it shows up in different ways. So I say it just because of that, because sometimes it feels a little bit different, but it's still coming from the same source.
Yeah. So it's some kind of source area.
Absolutely.
Yeah. For a certain kind of energy.
Mm-hmm. And it does feel like it's something that I've asked a lot of creatives, you know, is your creativity inside of you or is it outside of you? Mm-hmm. And there, you know, and the answers are as varied as the number of people that we ask, you know, a lot of people feel like creativity happens inside of them, even if they're inspired from without. But for me, I really do feel like I am just a very practiced conduit, you know, like I'm almost like Photoshop by proxy. I've got the skill set that is needed to bring certain things into form.
Yeah.
But so I do feel like it's without.
Is there an element that's similar to what people would think of as oracular or oracle or channeling? Is there some quality that you find similar to that?
I think so. And I say, I think so. It's like years and years of doing this and there's still, you know, cause some people would see the channeling as being like when some people channel, they don't have that. It's almost like their whole consciousness is turned. Like they're not conscious of the whole process, right? It's just
they
happening.
The building. Yeah,
exactly. And so it's not like that
not
for
like
me
that.
Because I am here, I'm witnessing it and I am making some critical decisions about the output. But the idea and the words to, like, when I was doing the Muse Tarot, the images just kind of showed up. And as they were showing up and I was doing the art, the poetry was coming. So I was like, I need to record and be on my computer at the same time as I'm creating the artwork. So, I mean, it's definitely a sense, there is that oracular sensation where things are coming in through from the top down, like I feel like it's coming down through the top of my head, out through my hands, but I am present.
Yeah, I've always been very interested in oracle process. Of course, in the Tibetan Buddhist world that I come from, there is a tradition of oracles. Are you aware of that at all? Do you know?
I don't know a lot about the details, but yes.
Well, for example, the Dalai Lama has an oracle, a human being who channels a particular entity that's been for hundreds of years, and each generation they raise a new monk to channel. It's called Nechung Oracle. You can watch it on YouTube. There's videos of it happening, and I've met that oracle, which was a very interesting conversation. He's a very lovely man. He doesn't consider himself to be particularly gifted or insightful or a teacher himself. But I did have the opportunity to talk to him for a couple hours once about the process. And there is a sense that you'll see it if you watch the video, he vacates. They put this outrageous headdress on him. You know, that's weighs 60 or 70 pounds, I'm told. He dances around and then he starts to hiss and he's pretty much gone. He describes it as he's sort of nearby, but he's not, you know, driving the car. And then the Dalai Lama can ask the oracle certain questions, you know, and supposedly the oracle is the one who told him exactly when to leave Tibet to escape. So there are other oracles like that. And then you have down to the, you know, the average songwriter like me, you go, well, where did that one come from? You know, in the shower or in a dream. So the whole process of, I'm curious how people define the muse. I think you defined it as a singular energetic source.
Yes.
And you said spiraling. So that's interesting. Can you visualize? And sometimes in this area, people bring visualization together with the process in order to get to tune into it more. If you visualize the muse, does it have a shape?
It's definitely spiral. And it's almost like a spiraling tunnel. And it is something that it's very different than that creativity that, you know, you're sitting there, because I worked as a creative, you know, in design and like as a graphic designer for years and years. And it's such a different sensation than like, okay, I'm sitting in front of this material and I need to create something. And now I need to kickstart my creativity. And I'm there and I'm like prodding it along. It's such a different sensation than this, like, it feels like I am sending my consciousness outside of myself, a little bit above my head, a little bit up into the ethers. And then there's this spiraling downward sensation or me move. Am I moving into the tunnel? Is the tunnel moving into me? I don't know.
And this is an actual experience that you have.
Yes.
And within an actual time frame, right? In other words, you could go in there at 4:10 and come out at 4:20 p.m. and it would have a finite sort of parameter to it like that?
That's a really good question. So usually the state in a way, and it almost feels, it does feel like a state. And it feels like, the words here. Such an amazingly profound question. How do we put words to these sorts of experiences? So it does feel like I'm in an altered state for sure, but I've never put myself on a timer for that state because I've always sort of felt like the muse energy feels like an opportunity and a gift. And so when it's there, I jump. And when it's done, it's done.
Yeah.
But I don't really have that kind of control over the timing of it.
Right.
So there have been moments in my life where, you know, I'm working on something that comes in this way, very few projects actually, and they come so fast and so furious, but then I am run ragged by the time we're finished because I am just doing. It's not the same as a regular project where, you know, you have a work day and you have your weekends off. You know, sometimes this, you know, if this energy lasts for a month and I'm in it for a month, then it is like it's like an obsession because it's just I'm just saying yes to it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, just like the by proxy artist, you know? Yeah. I'm just being the hands. It's an interesting state for sure. And it's quite different than when it does feel different than, let's say I'm reading tarot for someone and I'm getting really different type of information or an intuitive type of information where I'm just getting words and they mean nothing to me. And I just say them. That feels so different because I know in that moment that I'm like, I have no idea what I'm saying, but they're like, this is really like they're shaking their head and they understand. Whereas in this case, I'm getting this information and I'm the one shaking my head and I understand.
Mm. And then there's post muse.
Yes.
What are you supposed to do with the news from the muse in the aftermath? You're a marketing person.
I've worked in branding and marketing.
And you don't do that work anymore?
No. I work once in a while for the right client, if it's the right fit, and it has to be 100% yes, like in my system, in their system. I'm as excited for their project as they are, sort of thing. Feels good. It's doing a lot of, you know, the right. I feel like there's going to be really great outcomes in the either the world or in, you know, a group of people's lives. Then for sure, I'll jump into a project like that. But maybe one project a year. It's not very common anymore. And I worked for 15, 20 years doing quite a bit of work that didn't feel good in my system. So I have that, you know, very clear. Like this is not going to make me feel inspired. It's not going to be good because then I end up putting my creative energy into something that doesn't inspire me. And then I don't have any leftover. It's almost like creativity is this, when you're on it, it'll give you more, you know? So when I'm doing work that I'm inspired to do, then there's hundreds of potential projects at my doorstep. And if I'm doing work that really leaves me feeling uninspired and tired, and I, you know, do not want to sit down at my desk to work, then there are no projects there as potential. And it's probably because of my own mind, like my own mindset in that moment. But I just know myself enough to know that if I'm not inspired, then there's almost like there's going to be a full stop. And whether that means the work has dried up or whether that means I am just tired and burnt out and I maybe even get sick and I need a break, like there are consequences to me if I do not follow the creative path that feels right in my body. Because I am someone that's always creating no matter what. So I better be doing something that feels good.
Do you think about what you're going to be doing in 3 years to 5 years?
Sometimes. Right now, I don't know. I usually have a pretty good long-term plan. And to be honest with you, the world is changing so quickly and rapidly right now that as someone who is, you know, I'm creating tools that help people, or I'm creating these healing tools or courses, or, you know, like tarot decks are all about people using these tools for their own self-growth or their own intuitive deep dive. And because the world feels a little bit, it's just this big giant question mark right now, I feel like I'm not sure what we're going to need in a few years. So I feel like I'm not really sure what I'm going to create. Mm-hmm. So I've just finished a big project and now I'm sitting in the space, the very uncomfortable space of what comes next.
And what's the big project that you just finished?
Oh, I just did, it's called The Tarot of Curious Creatures. So I just sent in all of my final visual edits to Heyos, and that comes out in September. So
tarot
excited for that.
Of Curious Creatures.
Yes, it's a very different deck for me. I think last year I just needed something that was kind of eccentric and bizarre and made me laugh. And so they're human animals, they're human bodies with these human heads. And so it was just really fun. And it was a beautiful way for me to just move through a lot of the challenging energy and still be creating and still be connected to something that was, and it had to be almost totally different to capture my interest or to, you know, to pull me away from the news.
Yeah. So the deck goes out. Who buys the deck?
Do you mean like in the general population, like the types of people that would buy it?
What kind of people are you hoping would go buy that deck, or who actually does go buy that deck? What are they looking for? What are they, doing with the deck?
I think every deck that I've done is so different that, you know, they really are. Each one has its own sort of energy and its own, I have hope for each one in a little bit of a different way. So sometimes like with Sacred Creators, it's someone who is a business owner, or they're growing something, or they have a goal. And so they use the deck in that way. And with Lightseers, it's much more healing, or there are people who are, you know, just curious about getting in touch with their own intuition. And so they're learning tarot, or they're curious about their path or their own inner, it's a lot of inner healing, the messages from that deck. The Muse is, of course, much more inspiration, creativity. And then this new one is really what I hope, and I mean, my fingers are crossed here because I don't know for sure, but I suspect that the people who buy it will be, there will be some people who are looking to learn tarot, or they are already readers and they want something that's a little bit silly or a little bit fun.
Okay.
Or they're looking to explore some of these more profound messages with just, there's a certain amount of levity with the deck. And the other thing that I've created in this particular deck that's different, the other thing that I added to it was there's a border on the cards. And I want people to imagine that border sort of has a doorway or a gateway or a portal. And so there are creature conversations connected to each card so that people will be able to have, after they pull the card and read the information, you know, we get a little bit of information from those guidebooks, but most of the great, useful information, all the meaning, of course, comes from the person who asked the question. The reader just says things, and it's the person who's listening that puts the message together with their own intuition, with their own creativity, with their own experience. So I think, you know, it's the onus is always on the reader or the person getting the message.
So somebody buys the deck and they become the reader for somebody else?
They could. They
or
could
do they read
they
it for themselves? For their own?
They could read it both, depending on how they want to, depending on how they want to use the deck for sure. But in this case, there are these creature conversations, and I want people to imagine, especially people that are reading for themselves who want to go deeper and they're like, I kind of get that, but I want a lot more information. I want them to be able to have these conversations with the animal that's on the deck. So they could imagine the animal crossing through that border and then just have the mind's eye. Let's sit down. Let's chat about this topic. You know, the question that I came to you with, like, tell me a little bit more. So there's conversation starters.
And these entities or creatures that are manifesting somehow know more about it than we do?
Not necessarily. I think that depends on perspective and depends on how the person who's using the cards views the world. Uh-huh. Because some people will see it as an actual presence that may know more than they do. My personal take on it for me is that I would imagine or I would manifest this idea of this entity. And that is still coming from me or my higher self, or it's still connected to source, where I am just not able to, for whatever reason, my own history, my own experience, I'm not able to tell myself that and believe it. But if I hear it from the outside coming in, I will take that as truth.
So it's a projection.
Absolutely.
That's my worldview.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. And other people would think it's more tapping into something that's part of the larger ecosystem. That has its own independent basis?
They may. Yep. Some people do. Some people definitely work with different, you know, some people work with deity or they work with their guides or they work with, but I personally think that these things do exist, but I think we're all so connected that how are they not a part of us and how are we not a part of them? You know, if there is this sense of being one in this collective field of energy, then if there's a guide that could have amazing information, maybe that guide is just kind of, it's still connected to this oneness or to me. It's just able to, yeah, grab that information in a different way.
Your view is that you have access to that information yourself.
Ultimately.
Ultimately.
Yes.
But this is a kind of, the image that comes to my mind is somebody goes near my apartment in New York. There's a back stop there and people go and play tennis with themselves. And they hit it, and there's nobody there, but the ball comes back to them, and they hit it again. So this is, of course, you know, more than just with what you're doing, but with the whole idea of deity, the whole idea of guides, the whole idea of people like Hanuman, people like in the, you know, Indian tradition, the Tibetan tradition. Do they have independent existence and reality or not? And so different people have different view on this, you know, that they exist in their own right, in their own. So, of course, the Buddhist view is that actually neither they nor you have independent existence. So you can use the deity practice as a way of understanding more deeply your own lack of independent existence. And then that's a bridge to maybe a perspective in which the you don't need that kind of dualistic framework at all to have any kind of wisdom dawn. It's just spontaneously arising in the situation. But of course, then there are people who, in the Buddhist way, they say, the two mistaken views are, one is that those entities, gods, whatever, exist independently, and it's called theism or eternalism. That's one wrong view. But the other wrong view is nihilism, which says they don't exist independently and you don't exist independently. So usually people err on one side or the other of that equation. It sounds like you are a middle way person, it sounds like.
Yeah, for sure. Because right? I could see it both ways. Even if, like, I could say for sure that energy of that deity would exist. And it could also be because we have, for so many, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, generations, put our energy into the thought form of that deity. So it exists in its own way, but it exists. But there's a back and forth there, you know?
So it's got a sociopolitical bank account in a way. of a credit line because other people have invested in that perception. So to that extent, then the traditional forms may have certain potency that making up new forms wouldn't have.
Absolutely. Yeah. Quite possible.
So what are the traditional forms of tarot? Are there very traditional forms that have existed for hundreds of years, like the Joker? What is it?
So there are... there's the major arcana and the minor arcana, and I use those in my decks as well. So I'm drawing on the same archetypes. So there are 78 cards in the deck. And so we do have the magician and we have the high priestess and we have the empress and the emperor. And so I do use those same archetypes, and it works because they're archetypes of our human condition, our human existence, or our, you know, the hero's journey.
Right.
And that kind of encompasses all mythology and all human experiences, or even really, I would even say, I'm like, do I say this? Will I get quoted? But it really does encompass all religions as well. I mean, because it's the human story. And so there are these sorts of ups, highs and lows and, you know, so I am drawing on those same archetypes in the decks that I create. But I'm just creating the images of the high priestess, you know, in different ways. So they're different.
I see you're giving different outer form, but
exactly.
The essence is still there. So as far as archetypes go, do you feel each person has sort of some archetypical energy that you could pick up on?
Yes, I think not. I can't always pick up on, because I think we're often a blend. I think we often, you know, we have, depending on which part of our story we're living in that given moment, where, you know, we can see ourselves kind of as being very much in this scenario as maybe the cards would show. Because with the miners in the cards, the miners have, there are four suits, and those four suits, they're more about kind of the everyday things that may happen.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the majors, they're more the major energies. So definitely we would maybe lean towards a blend of a few of the majors in our lives, and then we can play out. I mean, we could have all of them in different places, but we definitely have some that are more, that stay with us for longer, that we really feel like, oh yeah, that's me. You know, for some people it's the hermit, or you know, for others they may feel like they're always creating, and that would be, you know, kind of some magician energy. So
Oh, wonderful. And do you have a feeling for your own archetype?
You know, it's hermit and magician, there you have it. Those are the two that came up.
Wow.
For me, those are, I have a little bit of both of those in me. They show up in different ways at different times, for sure.
Yeah. Do you tend to be reclusive? That's interesting. For a branding marketing person to be reclusive,
right?
That's kind of interesting. I get, well, there's the magician, right? So you have a sort of, it sounds like there's a little bit of a mix of opposites, right?
There definitely, definitely, yes. And when I am heavy in the creative side of things, you know, where I have this, okay, there's this magician energy happening where I feel like I'm putting together different elements, and it's that, you know, pulling on all my creative skill set, or sometimes learning something completely new. But I tend to be quite on my own when I'm doing that, focused on my own, not reaching out, not necessarily seeing my friends at that during that time period, because I'm just so in the energy of the project.
Right.
And it's not necessarily, I mean, that can also be like, oh, well, it's this like really working hard kind of thing. Sure, that happens, that productivity side, but it's much more about the sustaining this. It's like you breathe in this new project, this new energy, this new creativity, and it just, it needs to come out.
Yeah. Well, now, when it does come out, and when you come out, obviously there's a layer of intersecting with the world in a way that creates value and then comes back to you in the form of money. Mm-hmm. And, you know, on the cover of my book, I actually have a dollar bill, Creativity, Spirituality, Making a Buck.
Love it.
I have three figures coming down from, there's a sort of a Tibetan style monastery up in the hills. And the three figures are descending from there, assuming that they've done some kind of exploration, some kind of practice. One, and I guess it's three archetypes if you want to look at it that way. One is a monk in monk's robes. One is a businesswoman in a sort of business suit type of thing. And the third is a guitar player. Mm-hmm. So these three archetypes are coming down and descending into the world of actualization, you know, of activity. Mm-hmm. Re-entering the action. So you come into that world, and then I've been really exploring lately with people the notion of intentional livelihood as opposed to kind of really going with the flow, and then you just tap into a vein and it comes out. So for myself personally, obviously, as a musician and a songwriter, I've been at my least functional times created the most wealth. Let's just put it that way. You know, I've written songs that were like in what only could be described as downtime, hang time, play time. And then all of a sudden that taps into some vein. And then there's a tremendous amount of, you know, return on investment, very high rate of return on investment, you know? So then there's times when you work and you go, I really need to focus the lens here. I need to go talk to these six people. I need to pitch my stuff. I'm sure you went and talked to Hay House. You probably went, I need a publisher for this stuff that I'm doing. I better have my stuff together. I want to think about how much am I going to ask for this project and what, you know, what percentages I'm going to get. Which of those sounds more familiar to you?
So a little bit yes and a little bit no for a few of them actually, which is really cool. With Hay House, I actually, when I created my first deck, I wrote a letter to Hay House, I went through their whole thing. You know, I'm going to write this whole letter and get all the marketing pieces together and demographics for the audience and the whole nine yards. I had the letter and I didn't send it. It's one of those stories, right? Where I was like, that's my publishing company. I have the letter for them. And I think I felt like either it wasn't ready yet, I didn't have the audience that I thought that I would need at the time. It just wasn't. I also had a little bit of course, I had that creator sort of enoughness. Like, is it good enough? Am I a good enough writer? All the enough questions. And so I didn't send it. And when I did my second Kickstarter, actually my editor, who is one of the acquisitions editors there, came to me. And I was like, I have the letter. She's like, oh, the only thing that you need to do is we need this like formal letter from you and I'll send it to you because I have it. It's on my computer. Here you go. So that was wonderful. I mean, that's a beautiful, magical moment in my life of kind of getting prepared for the moment and then the moment coming. Mm-hmm. But I also do have that very logical part of me that is more the numbers and how do we make this work? I do find though with my own money blocks, because I've had many in my life, I grew up with a lot of negative beliefs around money. Like I grew up in a house where rich people are bad people and money, you know, money is you don't want it.
The root of all evil.
Yes, absolutely. And so I had to work through that. So I find even now, after probably 15, 20 years of doing, like not religiously, but definitely doing this money mindset work, I still have to be careful that I'm not overly focused on that. When I'm not overly focused on that, the creativity runs, the bank account fills and I'm like, good. And I don't need to know how much is in there because I know we're good. And then I look and I'm really genuinely surprised and like, awesome, you know, this is fantastic. But if I really focus for me on this stuff that makes me a little more uncomfortable because I'm not as adept at it. And I feel like, oh, I don't really know what I'm supposed to do here. Like I just need to hire people to do that. Or else I find that I will trip myself up in my mindset, in my energy. And then inevitably I'll make my decisions around my creative projects. Not necessarily that it's such a magical thing, but I will definitely make decisions around my projects from a place of lack, and that will limit what can happen. Yeah.
And did you make the pitch yourself? Did you have an agent?
I didn't.
You didn't go in with an agent, huh?
No, they came with me and I said, I know that most people said you need an agent, you need someone to represent, you need a lawyer. And basically I said, I've been an entrepreneur for, you know, I think 15 years at that point. And I had stopped for the last 5 or 6 years doing contracts with my clients for branding and design work, because I realized that if I relied on the contract and not on my intuitive hit about their type, is this a good person? Is this going to be a good project? Are we going to work well together? And the project went awry, or, you know, I didn't get paid or something happened. I wasn't like, am I really going to follow through and take that person to court for it? Probably not. So I just decided that I would go. This is such a strange business decision. But for me, to get my energy so mired, it was just, there's so much heaviness around that money piece, the contract piece, that I kind of bypass it in a way. And I just started to do these kind of very quick, like we'd sit down, especially, you know, if it was a local client, sit down. I would do a very simple contract, layman's terms. We both write it out. Yeah, this is what's happening. Sign here. So it wasn't the legalese. It was just, you know, very easy peasy, handshake kind of thing. And my contracts never felt like nothing happened. Like I got paid after that. Everything was so much better. People, you know, projects were easy. There was no question about the money. And it.
And is that that's what you did with Hay House?
Yep. Well, I mean, I had a contract that they did, but I didn't get a lawyer. I didn't get an agent. I just went to Hay House and I said, can I have an hour of time with your lawyer? And I want her to tell me what all of this means in layman's terms.
Wow. That's unusual.
It is. And it was probably, I mean, people, and if you're listening to the podcast and you're like, Chrisanne, that was the stupidest thing you ever did. And I would say you can have that view, because I don't think that it's for everyone.
Yeah. Don't write me an email with it.
Right. But it was for me, because then I understood it and I didn't need to wonder if the person that was representing me had a handle on it. And it just made me much more comfortable and much more familiar with the whole thing.
Wow.
And it helped me to just trust that it was the right decision.
Yeah. So yeah. I think that's kind of an intriguing, you know, I love polarity, and I mean, the downside of polarity is disparity. You know, mm-hmm. But when you have a nice charge on the two poles and you have, you know, equal amount of magnetic and repulsive force, it can be really the thing that makes the gyroscope spin, you know? So in this case, you have this clearly developed business side that it's, you know, it's interesting. It's, you are not somebody who's a babe in the woods about it. And just like, you know, there's some musician people that are just like, you know, huh, where's the gig? You know, and yet at the same time, you have a kind of magical process, for lack of a better way of describing it, that you lean into. And you went into the mouth of the business dragon with your magical process, but with some common sense and saying, let's walk through the contract. You didn't just say, I'll sign it.
Of course.
But
absolutely.
Of course, there could have been things in there without the training you wouldn't have recognized as giving away, like the paragraph that I guess you didn't read, where they get 80% of, you know, everything you earn after a certain age, you know, you didn't see that, right? You didn't notice that, you know, that you could have missed something by not being a specialist in that area. But you trusted it. You trust that process more than having an expert come in and work on it.
I did. And, you know, it also gave me, it made it much more easy for me to negotiate the contract because I understood exactly what I wanted and what I needed changed. And so that was fantastic because if we did, we took probably 3 months back and forth before I said yes, even though it was everything that I wanted. Wow. I mean, it was like, I had the letter for them. I also knew that I knew because I had just, I ran my own Kickstarter with all of my own marketing and we had 1,000 people back the project and it was enough of a yes from the market that I was like, this is going to be a really good product. So I knew the marketing, like I had the market research to back that up. Yeah. So I knew that, I hoped, you know, it wasn't like I had my crystal ball or anything, but I just felt like it's going to work and this is the best way forward. And I knew that I had been 6 months prior doing all of my own, I did my own manufacturing and worked with a printer in China and had things imported. I learned how to import and learned how to send out thousands of boxes and was just in the process of, okay, do I work with a publishing company or do I work with a fulfillment center? And I knew that I would maximize the amount of, I would make more doing it myself, but I wouldn't be able to distribute at the same rate that Hay House could distribute at. Right. So it was impossible for me to, part of my mantra when I was doing the Lightseer's Tarot in my head the whole time when I was doing it, it was like, let it be healing, let it be healing, let it be healing. And I just kept saying that. And so it just went against the whole idea of the project to try and cap it for capital versus like, let's just get it out there, you know?
Mm-hmm. So a lot of people out there who listen to these kind of things are themselves creative entrepreneurs. Yeah. We're targeted towards entrepreneurs, we call them, and cultural creatives. So there's a lot of people who right now are sitting there going, this person got a deal with one of the major publishing companies in this arena, is being featured on this, marketing campaign and getting out there. And she went in and basically did it all herself. And they're going to go, well, I don't know how to read a contract. I don't know how to pitch my thing to Hay House. So your style is, it's a DIY style, but you connect up with a legitimate, publishing company. So it's a hybrid model in a way.
Absolutely.
Right? It's an interesting model. And of course, one dimension of magic is what we call magical thinking. It's just wishing doesn't necessarily make it true. You could wish for a certain outcome, but doesn't necessarily make it true. Another is focusing the mind in a particular way so that outcome becomes more probable, because you're focused on it. Do you believe in magic in this sense? Are there things that happen outside of the predictability of conventional reality?
100% there are for me. Yes.
Could you bilocate? Could you be in two places at once?
I think some people probably can. I don't have that capacity, but I think that it's possible.
Could you exist in two different times at once?
Yes.
These are the things where we tag ourselves in a linear situation, right? And then the people who have become very comfortable in that linear situation look at the other thing as magical thinking. They even put their kind of therapeutic model on, saying this is what this person's suffering from.
Absolutely.
And then you have the magical people who go, these people are stuck in their conventional conceptual mind. But is there a third possibility where you're conventionally adapted? You can function very well. You can, go to which end of the credit card to put into the machine, and you know how to use a PayPal account and all that. But yet, you at times have experiences that, let's say, jump the fence in terms of what people would consider conventional reality.
All the time. This happens to me nonstop. And I think I have something on my website. I've got a banner on one of my pages that says magical thinking is highly strategic.
Wow. I think we found your zone here.
This, that's, I mean, it. That,
there's
for
your
me,
brand.
It is.
That's your brand right there, isn't it?
that's who I am. I mean, as a person, for sure.
Wow. Magical thinking is highly strategic. So you got to unpack that for everybody a little bit. Can you?
So for sure. I mean, I'm like, where do I start? There's so much to this topic. And if we are, if we rely on the things that we see, then that is our reality. And then we just keep seeing the same thing every day, and we don't allow ourselves to visualize everything else. And then our reality, then we're stuck in the loop of this is real.
Yeah.
If we give ourselves the playtime and the permission, it's like, give yourself permission to think magically, because then your system gets used to that possibility. And then legitimate opportunities start to appear. And it's not that they are not there when you're in that linear thinking. It's just, you don't see them because your mind is looping on that same box this is what I expect to see, and this is therefore I see it. So I think when we open up our creative mindset, it's our ability, it's our potential. We start to think different things. We start to activate different areas of, and who knows if it is actually, you know, I don't know the answer. Is it our consciousness that's then going in and grabbing a piece of potential in the quantum field? Maybe. I don't know. All I know is that it works, you know? And I do this practice where, when you were talking about linear time, for people who are really, because I am a time person, so I have to kind of...
I bet you're on time. I bet you're very punctual.
There are times when I'm not, but I do now. I've been so much better at it as I went through my entrepreneurial journey, because that was something that, as a creative, you have to be on time, because people assume that you're going to be this like flighty creative. So for me, it was being on time equaled I'm serious about business.
Yeah, I see.
So it's not that I am naturally good at it, but I am. I'm always constantly aware that that is something that I need to be aware of, you know?
Wow. Okay.
But this linear thing that, that I do there, and this is a process that anyone listening, I mean, give it a try. If you are even like, think of yourself today, and then I will visualize that I am talking to my younger self at like any moment in time that was difficult. And I'm like, you're going to be okay. Everything's going to be fine. Look where we're at. Like, here's the thing. Like, you're great.
Whoa.
But then I also imagine that I'm here getting that information from my future self now.
Oh,
whenever,
wow.
So I'm in a difficult moment, I can be like, okay, you know what? What does my future self have to say? And so we're still on this line that it's like our human mind can't, I know that we can be in two places at once, but I can't imagine it any other way. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm, I can't experience it any other way except for linear. So I sort of have these little hacks that I do that kind of bypass that, what my brain needs.
Yeah.
And I give myself that multiple timeline thing anyways.
So, you know, I do think that we've tapped into a very unique way you have of looking at this, because we're talking about things. Everybody has some kind of perspective on this. So what came to mind when you're talking about, you said, you know, if you're used to seeing it a certain way, then you see it that way, and then you're in a loop, which, of course, we Buddhists call that samsara, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's a loop, drum loop. But what I thought of immediately was a third eye, which is something that recurs everywhere. You see it all over the world in different arcane traditions. And there is, obviously, a ganglia nexus up here, that is, you know, from any type of medical, Western medicine, Chinese medicine, there's some kind of nerve nexus there. And then whether that is, and many deities are portrayed having that third eye, right? Mm. And the eye of wisdom, it's called things. So, of course, it could be taken as a metaphor. Okay, you have this third eye, and now you can sort of tune into the notion of wisdom, of intuition, whatever you want to call it. Do you believe in any way on a certain level that it's just quite a literal thing? Have you ever seen it?
You mean a third eye sort
of? Yeah. You look at somebody and see it.
So I don't see people's third eye But I do believe that we have this whole other sense that we can access. And I often feel like I have like my fingertips just like holding onto the edge of the building, you know, like that idea, like I just have my fingertips touching it, you know, and people say, oh, you're so intuitive and you gave me all this information. And, you know, how did you know?
Right.
And I feel like even the most intuitive people right now, we're just on the edge of what that could be.
Mm-hmm. You mean as a evolutionary statement or?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah. I do think that we are, because in my life, I've gone from, you know, all of these beliefs around whether it was money or the way we should be and what we should do in life. And I've kind of said, okay, I'm just like, even just like in my small piece of reality, how many times, you know, how many loops have been broken, and I see this amazing expansion afterwards that I can't imagine if we were all brought up in this way of just like I just feel like there's definitely we're in the middle of evolution. I'm going to say it. We are evolving mm-hmm. right now. And it's mm-hmm. like this expansion of consciousness and an expansion of awareness, but it's also an expansion of belief and our ability to tap into our own set of beliefs that work for us. You know, I feel like we're starting to have a little more autonomy around that.
Well, and there's been, you know, there's been a lot written about what you're talking about right now. As, you know, relatively speaking, as a species, are we tapping into something where we're becoming more consciously co-creators of the reality that we seem to be inhabiting? Mm-hmm. Coming from a lot of different angles, you know. So it sounds like you're experiencing some shift yourself personally. Is that, would that be fair to say?
Absolutely. In the last 10 years of my life, things have shifted quite dramatically. And I was always, you know, so people that have known me my whole life would always say, well, you were always so creative. And this was of course always going to happen that you were going to do all of these things, but it never would have happened had I not made a decision to say, okay, I'm done with this belief system. I'm going to believe something else.
I'm done. Check, please.
Yes.
Well, now when I did have Alberto Violdo, as we talked about before we started the podcast, on the podcast. And one thing he said is the virus is the accelerator of human evolution. Now this is a shaman, experienced shaman talking. And it's not just like, oh, wouldn't this be a cute new agey kind of thing to say? He's saying for thousands of years, the role of the virus in the ecosystem is to accelerate human evolution. Does that resonate with you? Do you feel that yourself?
You know, it's totally possible. I've been...
By the way, excuse me, I'm not saying everybody should step out there and get sick. Let's be really
absolutely.
Clear about that.
Yes.
No, we take care of ourselves. Just not that you should get... The virus has to inhabit your body in that particular way in order to have it. But it is a global event that's happening right now. And it is shifting everybody's reality all at once. And so in that sense, it's there may be some kind of dimension to it that is not as simple as just, oh, I caught a cold, you know?
Totally. And even if we take the actual getting sick out of the equation, I think it's the first time in human history where we have looked at all the different places on the planet and said, okay, we're kind of the same, you know, because prior to this, it was like, oh, it was way over there. It wasn't going to hurt me. And now it's like, wait a second, we're a human family. So even that global sense of oneness has shifted in some way that is incredibly powerful.
Well, and that's also making some people incredibly paranoid at the same time because they don't want that. They don't want to recognize that connection. It's not
sure.
A convenient. It's, you know, who's a tremendous... for me anyhow, a source of a very grounded and kind of, but somehow, and also very factual based portrait of all this is Al Gore. I know that name didn't expect to come up there, but mm-hmm. there's a book that I keep asking people, did they read it? And it's about six drivers of global change. Have you ever seen that book? I forgot the exact title of it.
I saw the documentary.
The Inconvenient Truth?
Oh, that's the one I saw.
No,
there
no,
you go.
This is quite a bit beyond that in terms of his personal. So among the six drivers are globalization, microbiology, and tech advancement in general. And he's looking at these things as how they come together to basically essentially create a new reality in which human beings are the sort of co-designers of the ecosystem. You know, we're not just waiting for Godot to come down and fix the thing, you know. So, and also that maybe a lot of friends that we talked about these kind of things, you know, are looking at this clear manifestation of interdependence becoming, to recognize interdependence, you have to shrink your sense of self-importance that gets in the way, right? Mm-hmm. And you have to relax certain aspects of preservation, you know, that kind of reactive fight or flight mind. And then things start to percolate and you find your place in the what I call the Banyan tree experiment, you know. It's like a network of communication. So you're not a fortune teller, right? You're not. Do you sit down with people and sort of help them to see what's going on?
So I absolutely do, but not in a fortune teller kind of way. So that's an interesting question, because a lot of tarot readers come from there are the tarot readers that are more, they use tarot as a tool of divination, I would say. And there's the other tarot readers that really help people to see their options or see within, or to help them to kind of see some clarity, you know, that's like, that's something's very nebulous and let's get really clear. So I am much more on the side of you helping other people to get clarity on things that they already, that I think they already know. They think they don't. I think they do.
Uh-huh.
Versus so it's a different type of intuition. Both are extremely profound for the person experiencing the reader, but I'm not that kind of divination fortune teller kind of thing. Although I do get hits on things for sure. Like my, mm-hmm. That's something that I've noticed a lot actually being in my house for the last, you know, 18 months, I think we're at, or maybe not quite, but, time, right? Like my conception of time has definitely been off for the last, probably only been just over a year, but being at home, I've noticed that my system is reacting prior to a lot of news. And that was something that I had that before, but I didn't know why it was reacting, because I wasn't as present. I wasn't as aware. I wasn't as still. So there's a lot happening between, like with what you were saying, with like this kind of, nodes of connection that are happening, I think, all over the world, that I notice in my physical body now that I didn't notice before in the same way. So that's been a fascinating awareness, new discoveries, right? Always new.
And I feel like I'm going to say here something for the first time. It's not going back to normal.
Oh no. Never going back.
You're not going back, but it's not going back either.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, people are going to try to track, well, I had a certain thing going on and it may not be possible. So it'll be an interesting moment of, you know, different people adapting to that in different ways. Do you actually do readings one-to-one with people?
I do. Yeah.
Is that something?
But not very often.
So you're not really, you know, looking for clients in that area?
I don't know. I do it more with so I run a program called Branding and Magic. So that's very business focused, where I help people to figure out their business stuff in very unique ways through guided visualization. They learn about their target client through, they learn all the stuff they need to learn, but they learn it in it's like the back door to the mind. We go in and then they get everything that they need without all of the traditional marketing babble. In that program, I do business readings. So my forte, I would say, because I have the, you know, I can help with the reading side, and then let's go right into consultation. So that part I really like. I don't enjoy doing readings, certain readings that are that come up a lot when you're just doing open tarot readings. People often ask about love, or they often ask about health. And I don't particularly, you know, I find it really hard to give the tough love. And I also find it when I was doing more of those styles of readings, you know, there's a lot of people that will come to a tarot reader because they want validation on the thing that they already want. And they love you if you give it to them. And if you just give them you see, they're not. So it's an interesting, it's, you know, great, honest tarot readers. Their work is so, it's just so fantastic because they're able to get, you know, you're constantly needing to give people, not constantly, but, you know, depending on the question, sometimes you have to give people the answer that they don't always want. So I don't enjoy doing that.
So, you know, it might be the case that, well, I knew that I came to a definition of the devil one point, because I just thought, like, what are people talking about? And I said, the devil is the one who tells you what you want to hear.
Mm.
And then, definition of teacher is the one who tells you that which you don't want to hear.
Mm. That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
And I hear you on that. It would be very, people would have to want to, you know, my teacher used to say to people a couple of different answers to certain things, but one of them was, good luck, sir. Good luck, madam. The person, if they're not coming to have that kind of contact that you're talking about, most good teachers will just let it be. And that's hard. Because most good teachers are also compassionate people. They would like to help somebody. You know, and that generates all this kind of other thing. So that's the last little bit of what you said was very powerful. I feel like I hope that you find when you listen to this that it's a window into your work and who you are for people. That's sort of what we're trying to do here. And, you know, I'm going to talk to Patty about you because we have a mutual friend at Hay House who's one of my best friends and a dear friend. And I hope that that's a fruitful relationship for you, beyond just the kind of friendship and spiritual level, but you get what you want out of it, that you worked so hard to have happen. And I want to really thank you for coming and spending this time together.
Yes, thank you so much. And it's been such an unexpected, you know, like you said, we were going to meander in conversation and we did. And I'm so grateful for that. It's really... What a lovely conversation. Thank you.
Thank you. And I never know exactly what's going to happen in these, which is, they're a little bit of a jazz element, you know? So thank you for going along on the journey. And, we will also, you know, be happy to tell, is there anything you want to let people know out there before we close?
You know what? I would just say, if you feel called to reach out to me, then feel free to reach out. I always like to hear from people. I'm on Instagram quite a bit, and my username there is Pixie Curio. So just, you know, slide into my DMs and let's have a chat.
So you're inviting people to just connect with you that way.
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay. Well, Chrisanne, you're a delightful person, and thank you so much for gracing, I'm going to use that word, gracing our creativity, spirituality, and Making a Buck podcast, and hope to see you again sometime.
Likewise. Thank you.
Well, there you have it, folks, episode number 22 of the CSM podcast. We hope that you enjoyed listening to it as much as we enjoyed making it, and that you gleaned some insight from it that you can bring back into your life. As always, if you like what you hear here, please subscribe and give us a rating on your favorite podcasting app. Also, if you're interested in studying with David and joining us in community, head over to dharmamoon.com for an up-to-date listing of our programming. Huge special thanks to our co-producer Melissa Mattern, who is essential in all the ways. My name is Michael Kammers, co-producer and voiceover person, and this is like my 10th voiceover, so I'm doing it with my hands raised high in the air and slowly dancing. I hope the good vibes are coming through. So in conclusion, to play us out this week, we're going to share an Easter egg, an instrumental arrangement we did of one of David's songs entitled I'll Be a Gambler If You Deal the Cards. He played this with Jerry Garcia, Taj Mahal, and David Grisman in the Great American String Band. This one didn't make the cut as underscoring, so we'll let it see the light of day to take us home. It also features special musical guest Alex Brumel on guitar. May you be safe, healthy, happy, and at ease.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up now that spring is here, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself thin. So what's the right amount of socializing for you? Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. It's a great way to build relationship skills, figure out your goals, and so much more. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/beherenow today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/beherenow.